Hey, wonderfuls, welcome to episode 388 of the podcast with my marvelous guest, Zoe Nutt. She is a phenomenal musician and just a wonderful human being. I'm so happy that I got the total pleasure of speaking with her this quarantine. And I'm also so excited to welcome you back to some non-gents, some non-boys of summer. That was a wonderful ride we had together. In a very strange time. And I'm excited for you to hear Zoe's episode. So I hope everyone's doing okay. Thinking of you all, and talk to you soon.
Do you do this yourself, or like the pairing, or do you have someone that...
I have a wonderful person who does it for me.
Perfect.
And who is extremely skilled and is not me, and that's why he's so skilled.
Yeah.
So we are probably in good shape, certainly better than if it were just me.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust myself. It scares me just doing this sometimes. I'm like, I'm gonna mess it up.
I know. And do you record from home much? Like, is that something that you've delved into, or are you used to doing a studio?
Typically more studio based. I've got a microphone, I've got an interface, I've done some home recording, but it's not really my specialty. And being mostly deaf, I always am thinking, well, I'll just let someone who can hear do that part. But I have been
Yeah. That's where we all are. We're all learning things that we didn't know we would also need to know.
Exactly.
In order to make the bits and pieces come together the way we hopefully need them to. Are you feeling creative? Like, I'm not to just like launch into super deep stuff, but I'm so curious because I feel like, you know, for me with this pandemic, I just remember at the beginning, people were like, and you can finally write that novel, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my first thought was like, I'm very depressed about all of this. I don't know if I'm that person that's like, I'm so miserable, I've got to create. I wish I were, because I'd be more prolific. But how about you? Do you feel inspired? Is it back and forth? What's it like for you right now?
Yeah, I think it's been just all over the place, honestly, when this all first started. I felt like I was glued to the TV for the first 4 days, like watching every news station I could, you know, like figuring out, what is this? What am I supposed to do? Is there anything I can do? So that was definitely the beginning. And I was finishing up my record that I just released yesterday, but I was finishing that up.
Gosh.
Yeah. So it's finally...
I knew it was coming, but I guess I forgot that it was yesterday.
Yeah.
That's like amazing timing.
So yeah, it was perfect timing. So I was working on that record, finishing it up at the time, and we had literally, I think, like less than a week before the shutdowns happened here in Nashville, we had had everyone, all the studio musicians, in one room recording, and we had knocked out the final songs that we needed. It was very, creative wise, it was kind of strange because I went from just finishing a record to everything stopping immediately. Thankfully, like, I don't think I'd have a record out if I hadn't scheduled that, like, when I scheduled it, if it had been just a week later.
No doubt.
Yeah. So
no doubt.
It's kind of creepy to think, you know, but so in that respect, I mean, I felt creative because I was kind of forced to get these things done. And I have been writing a decent amount, but it is hard. Like, you really being in it, I think for me, being in the right space physically is really important too. So like, I always try to separate my spaces, and being home alone, living alone too, during a quarantine where there's no one there to kind of help differentiate your space and where you spend your time in these spaces, that I think is the hardest creative hit there, you know? Yeah.
Absolutely. Are you by yourself, or are you with folks in your dwelling environment?
So I live in Nashville, and my family, my parents live in Knoxville, 3 hours away. So I have visited them, like we've all been safe, but that's been my quarantine group. But when this all first started, I was really scared to even go over to their house because I didn't want to get them sick. Or my grandmother lives next door. I didn't want to get her sick. So I stayed in the house like alone for the first 2 months, I think, of all of this. And my roommate had moved out like in December, all on good terms. But, you know, it was this moment I'm like, why did I let her move out? like, I'm alone here. And this is horrible timing. Because,
Oh, my gosh.
I guess, I mean, I guess for some people, it's hard living with a person that they didn't necessarily sign up for 24/7 with. And then for others, it would be preferable than to being alone. And, you know, I don't know what they certainly don't feel like there's an ideal version of this for anyone. But the ways in which it's challenging has taken so many different shapes depending on what everybody's circumstances are. Had it not kind of ground to a halt the way that it did, what would the last couple of months have been like for you once you did have that last session with everybody in the studio? Rather than like it screeching to an abrupt halt, what would the kind of wind down have been like for you, do you think?
Good question. That right after that all had stopped, my plan originally was to have Brandy Clark and the Cadillac Threes, Neil Mason and Jaron Johnston, come in to the studio with me. I hadn't met them all yet, and they are featured on the album, but we had to do it quarantine style, where they're recording in their own home. So I was really excited to meet those artists. They're songwriters and musicians in town that I really love. So that I was really looking forward to meet them, and I didn't get to do that, at least in person. And I guess other than that, it really, like with a record that you're putting out, being like a younger artist, there's going to be a lot of like going and playing shows and meeting people and shaking hands and trying to just say hello to everyone you can and, you know, get yourself in FaceTime with some people, and none of that's happening. I bought new clothes. I was like, I'm going to go out and make the best impression.
Sure.
And yeah, so that sort of thing I think really changed, looking at my closet full of clothes that I had nowhere to go with. I know that's petty in the grand scheme of things, but those sorts of things definitely changed, just like the business interactions that I had hoped to get, and we're still doing them. It's just in ways like this, where it's over Zoom or over FaceTime and that sort of thing. And the same goes with writing. I'd expected to be able to be in rooms with people more this year to just write more songs and work on album number two. Yeah. And I really am not a fan of the Zoom write. It's just, it's hard and it feels very sterile.
Indeed.
I definitely have there are three writers that we all were around each other when this all started. So we know that we're all okay. And thankfully I have those people, but other than that, it's like, well, you guys are stuck with me. You get to write with today.
Yeah.
I can't complain too much.
Kidding.
Like I'm lucky. A lot of people, I think, have been hit way harder in their lives with this than I have. So I'm very grateful that, I can still do what I do, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And by the way, the clothes thing, you're putting in that context of something that is really not petty at all, because it's you know, you look at those clothes, it's attached to your career, it's attached to your passion, it's attached to, you know, your drive and the future and all of that. So I don't think anybody is going to listen to you say that and think you're, you know, Cinderella's stepsister. Like, you're definitely, you know, it's very much attached to what you do and, you know, to your point, getting out there and getting, you know, your music out there and heard and all of that. And that's really important. So that's completely understandable. Did you grow up in Knoxville? Are your parents and family still where you were born and raised?
Yeah. I grew up in Knoxville. My parents are still there. One of my grandparents is over there. Like, a lot of my family is in Knoxville. And I love it. If you don't know anything about Knoxville, it's a a little lake town, really. Big football mm-hmm. town. It's football and lakes. That's like, that's what you do in Knoxville, which, and I,
but not football in lakes.
Oh, sorry.
But maybe
yeah,
someday.
Football and lakes in two different spots. But, yeah, lots of water sports. and so I like the lake part the most. I love football to cheer for my team. I have no clue what's going on. But this is a podcast about being a nerd, and I'm definitely one of those in that respect. But yeah, Knoxville was definitely like something really special to me still, and I always go back. So yeah.
Yeah. And I love that you immediately outed yourself as a nerd. That's amazing. Yeah, no pressure either way, whether you are a huge football buff or not.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think that is something that I kind of think of with Knoxville. I've never been to Knoxville. I've only been to Nashville, but everyone I know who is from Knoxville or who's been there is like, it's just kind of one of those places that, you know, there's a reason people write about it in songs, and you know, that it's a really special place. So I hope I get a chance to go there.
Yeah.
At some point. Are you from a musical family?
Well, in some ways, yes. My family loves music. They're audiophiles to the extreme, but they don't know how to play an instrument. They're not that kind of musician. So I did come from a family that gotcha. Was just like, that always really valued music and valued artists in that way. I feel like I get my love for lyrics from my parents, especially because like growing up, going to school, my dad would play songs in the car and he'd ask me and my brothers what they meant and really to like analyze
Ooh,
lyrics.
I like it.
Yeah. Even when you're like in elementary school, he'd be asking these questions, and some of the songs probably had some deeper themes that I did not understand yet, you know, in songwriting. But but we would drive in the car. And,
like what? Like what did you, what was, yeah, what was your dad into?
That he would play
for you? I'm assuming it was probably a cross section, but
he was very much like a 90s kind of rock guy. I think in that respect, he loved playing Sublime, anything having to do with the White Stripes, Jack White, Beck, Cake. He really likes Johnny Cash too. I feel like we listened to Boy Named Sue more times than I can count. So like it's a bit of a mixture, but there's a lot of that that kind of rock element, I think, in everything that he listens to. And for instance, Sublime, some of the songs that they played, they're not exactly kid friendly. Even though I love Sublime.
I was gonna say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is like we'd be going to school driving, and I know my dad really, he knew I really cared about the lyrics probably more than my brothers, and so he would push that harder on me, asking me what they meant. And I'm at this point I'm deaf in one ear completely. I don't hear what's being said in the car well, so I was always nervous, like what's he gonna ask me, what does the song mean, and I sure. can't hear it that well, but it was always really fun. And when we'd pull up to the drive at school, if I hadn't really understood what the song meant and explained it to him, he wouldn't let me out of the car. Like the teachers would have to come up, he'd stop the car and turn around in the chair and just look at me and like, what does it mean? What do these words mean?
Wow.
Like,
as the teachers are like, let's can we do our job yeah. that you seem to be doing right
and
now?
And he's like, my job's more important here. I'm educating her in music. And none of that was ever like a, you know, a stage mom, stage dad type thing. Yeah. He really just genuinely cared.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
I'm Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
And together, we host a podcast called Still Buffering, where we answer questions like,
why should I not fall asleep first at a slumber party?
How do I be fleek?
Is it okay to break up with someone using emojis?
And sometimes we talk about bugs.
No, we don't. Nope.
Find out the answers to these important questions and many more on Still Buffering, a sister's guide to teens through the ages.
I am a teenager.
And I was too.
butts, 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 butts.
No. Will you change your mind?
How did the you creating music stuff start?
So I guess I like growing up, I was always in choir in school, you know, in middle school and high school. And I remember auditioning for a musical. It was 1776 was the musical. And I really wanted this main lead girl part. I was a freshman in high school and I didn't get the part. I was actually cast as a man instead, which was a little embarrassing being a freshman in high school, you know, being mm-hmm. the dude in the musical when I was very already self-conscious. It's like, great.
Was it an all-girls school or were they just kind of not
no,
being gender specific to casting?
No, they had it was a co-ed school. They just cast me as a man. Yeah. They had plenty of guys to choose from, but I guess I just had that I had that effect. I just really screamed dude that year.
Meanwhile, I was over in my high school being like, why can't I play this guy?
Yeah.
I want to play the male role. I want to.
Oh,
like,
if it was a cool male
role, the grass
role,
is always greener.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then I would have been about
been
it.
All over it.
I was like this. I didn't have a cool part at all. And I think actually I don't think anyone noticed it too much, but like the clothes that we were wearing for that show were rentals and they really didn't fit me either. I was like, I was a stick. And so like we had this dance number and my pants started falling down during the show. So it was like all of that was scarring. If it had been a cool part, I would have been like, yes, I can be the dude. This is great.
Right.
But it was not
right.
that look.
It was not that.
But all that being said,
I wonder how often people do 1776 now that Hamilton exists.
That's
true. I'm guessing that musicals like that probably get retired because everyone's like, well, if I could just draw your attention to this modern masterpiece. Like,
exactly. I honestly haven't seen Hamilton yet because I didn't. To buy tickets, I've heard it's just really hard and to find that out. And so now it's like you're able to stream it and watch it now. So I need to watch that. Cause it's just one of those things that I realized, wait, I'm missing out on some culture here. I think you're right. Yeah. 1776 is old news now. But I auditioned for that play and I got the part that I really didn't want. I was embarrassed, you know, scrawny little kid in a, and so I ended up getting a voice coach and I learned how to sing really well. I got a voice coach and I ended up getting like every lead part after that I wanted
Well, talk about a testament to voice coaches.
Uh-huh.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, especially
that is not necessarily what I expect you to say. Like, I love that it just turned right around like that. That's amazing.
Like what you said about the guy, like, I totally can be the guy. Like, that definitely is my personality of, wait, I didn't get the part. I'm going to go get the part next time. I'm going to do this, even though I have no idea how. So
good for you.
Yeah, so that's definitely that switch there I'm at this point, I'm deaf in one ear completely still. So there were some struggles like where I'd be singing more so I could hear myself versus everyone else being able to hear me. Kind of like, you know how you talk, talk like kind of inward. People do that naturally sometimes too. But that was like a big deal for me to like have to learn how to trust that what I'm singing is right, even though it doesn't always feel right or doesn't sound right to me.
Wow.
So, and at this point, I wasn't thinking of music professionally in any way. I just really wanted the part. I really wanted to get that. So I really hadn't even thought about it professionally until I wanted to go to college and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I thought, well, I'm good at this. Why don't I audition for some schools and go to school for classical music? And because that's what I was studying in voice was like opera, all different types of arias and classical singing. So I went to school for that. I went to Belmont University here in Nashville and I immersed myself in that for like 3 years and almost finished a full degree. I think I had like a few classes left of like choir and maybe one extra music class. And I was very unhappy in that major. Mm. I was, I think, pretty depressed and sad in that moment. And I'd immersed myself in something that I thought I would like, and I really learned that I didn't. And oddly enough, that year, of course, I had some breakup with some dude. And so I had that, and I was already like questioning everything about my career and what I wanted to do. And I ended up writing my first songs in college then. And Belmont happened to have a songwriting program there as well, like a whole major dedicated to songwriting. At the time, like, that I auditioned, there was like a 20% acceptance rate. So it was like, actually, you know, it was hard to get into. And I wrote my first four songs, submitted it to them, and I got in. And I thought, okay, maybe this is what I can do. And so it was, it was a strange way to fall into it. I think I've always been like I can be very self-deprecating, very underconfident in a lot of things like that. So just naturally, I think my personality lends to it, plus the hearing loss. So I think having that moment really changed things for me personally, having that validation of saying, okay, people recognize this is good, and this, I should try this. So that's really how I got into music, I guess, is just me being really nervous the whole time and just kind of dancing around it, seeing, you know, oh, should this be it? No, maybe this, you know, and just kind of finding my way.
Well, it's interesting too, because, you know, I think a lot of people have the experience of, you know, obviously I'm sure, you know, you're not alone in, you know, kind of jumping into something in college and having a sense of what it will be like, or, you know, having a sense that the passion's there, but needing to kind of dig in deeper to explore it, to find out if it's the right avenue. And some people find out that they are in the dead wrong place for what their souls really desire. And then there are people maybe more like you who, you know, the sort of the general direction was there, that instinct was all there, that passion was there, but it happened to be this like sharp left turn or whatever, you know, within the same kind of general principle versus like, and then I realized I needed to go to law school. Screw music, you know. which happens too. Do you mind talking a little bit about your hearing loss, and was that something that started as a kid, or was it, did something happen? What's your journey been like that?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So I was born partially deaf. So my parents found out I wasn't responding to them well when I was a baby. And by the time I was 8, I had lost all the hearing in my right ear. So I think they started catching on to it by 4 years old, because I was a really quiet kid that, you know, played by herself. You know, it's not like they weren't paying attention, but it's hard to tell. So by the time I was 8, I'd lost that hearing completely. I remember like picking up the phone, putting it to my right ear, and, you know, I'd say to my mom stuff like, no one's on the line. You know, I didn't really realize, oh wait, I can't hear out of this ear, you know? So that happened, and I just moved on with my life. Nothing was really ever made of it. The doctor said that hey, it just happens sometimes.
Please tell me that they were slightly less flip than
okay. They were very.
They just like they tussle your hair like tussle. Oh, no. Sorry about that, Zoe. This happens.
No, they were really great. No, I had a great pediatrician too, because I had RSV as a baby too. I had a really bad bout of that, and I was like extremely sick, and this pediatrician came in and talked to my mom at the hospital, and he's like, I'm gonna be your new doctor, because my doctor was not at the time paying any attention to my extreme RSV that I was having. So he came in, and he was always my pediatrician after that, and he was so serious about the hearing loss. He really cared. He had known me since I was just a tiny little thing. But the way they really said it was just that they don't know why it is. It could be genetic, or it could be just something from birth that just happens in that way. Maybe from the RSV itself, or sorry, not from the RSV. There's another, I'm trying to remember. There's something that poses as a common cold to a lot of pregnant mothers. pregnant women, and I know sometimes babies can get it, and it doesn't. Sometimes it can end with hearing loss or brain defects. I'll try to remember what that's called. But they were wondering if maybe my mom had that, because she was working with a lot of children while she was pregnant, and so maybe she had caught something. So all that being said, they were taking it very seriously in that respect. But it really was, at the end of the day, we don't know, and we're just gonna move forward and on your life. If you need help with something, we'll help you. But there were just no answers for it. So I did just move forward. I said my speech was kind of weird growing up, but my parents didn't take me to a speech therapist. They're very much like, go-getters, like, we will help you and we'll get this done. We know what to do. And my mother's worked with a lot of special needs kids, so she's helped with that kind of that speech therapy style before. So they just told me, like, they would correct me when I said something wrong, be nice about it. And I really kind of grew out of my speech issues that I had that typically happen when you're deaf or hearing impaired. People say that, like, you don't sound deaf. I'm like, it's not always the case.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's a long-winded story there.
No, it's not. Listen, I'm about to make it more long-winded because I'm fascinated. What is that like in terms of, I'm probably asking something that, it's, if you're colorblind, like, how do you explain that? Or, with my sort of like past with, any kind of mental illness stuff I've had that was like fairly unique, it's like, how do I find a language to try to describe, like, it's kind of like if you're forced into this corner of trying to figure out a way to make an analogy to someone who, it's by no fault of their own, hasn't experienced that same thing. But I am curious if it's worth talking about, or if there's even a way to talk about it, you're a parent or a speech coach, like how somebody sort of articulates to you and says, this is what you're saying. It doesn't sound to us like you think it sounds, and here's how to correct that. Like, how is that communication articulated, if that makes sense?
Yeah, that does. And I can, like, growing up when I was little, I don't remember everything they particularly did, but I do remember a lot of what my classical voice coach taught me, which applies very similarly. And a lot of it is feeling something more than hearing it. So there was some guesswork involved too, of just, I'd sing it, maybe I'd say something or sing something, and she would just tell me to, like, maybe open my mouth a little differently, relax my tongue, put in more effort, like, in my diaphragm, more emphasis there, like, because those muscles down there really engage and help with your breath support for the singing side of things. But a lot of, like, mouth shape, tongue shape, that sort of thing. And then it's just guesswork. Yes, you did it right. No, you didn't. And you feel that, like, and... So I think that's the best way to explain it. It's just, it literally is a feeling. And, like, if you were to sit in your room, like, saying weird words or vowels different ways, you'd notice, oh, that really does feel different, So that's really, I think that's the best way to explain it. I'm sure as a speech therapist, they have a way better way of explaining it. But it is kind of hard to say to someone, you can't understand what this is, but do it,
Yeah. Well, no. I think that's so extraordinary. And what I think I'm responding to so strongly in this moment, because I haven't had a ton of conversations, and I, even being, a performer and a singer and all of that kind of stuff, I never had formal vocal training, and no one ever told me why I should or why, I mean? Like, there was no... Like, I was not, unlike you, I don't feel like I was a kid or a teenager who sought out a bunch of stuff that wasn't right in front of me, which, for better or for worse, probably for worse, but, that's just, like, who I was. And so there are things like that, to this day, I don't have a strong understanding. I absolutely understand diaphragm, breathing and how important that is to use, even when I'm just doing voiceover stuff, and voiceover training a little bit when I, you know, but I was a fully grown adult by then. And I really respond to everything you're saying, because, you know, if you have done anything else that's physical, be it, you know, training with a physical trainer, or, you know, learning how to box, or learning how to dance, or, you know, any number of other, you know, even when we think about like learning how to swim, like those physical acts, if you don't ever train to do certain things like singing, or even, you know, maybe as an artist, if you don't have formal training, I feel like there may be these whole windows that you're not opening up and looking through, or doors you're not walking through, that are very physical and physically disciplined. And so I think that's so wonderful. Like, it seriously kind of makes me want to go take voice lessons, because I think it would be so interesting and cool and helpful to have a relationship to a function that you don't necessarily, is what I'm saying making sense?
Oh,
like, you don't necessarily associate it with the physical. It's sort of, it's like, is my voice scratchy or is it not? Is my, you know, am I hitting the right note or not? It's like, no, there's a whole wonderful world inside of all of that that's so much deeper and so much more physical. And I think that's really, really cool. And what a great way to develop a relationship with something you're passionate about that you know, that enables you to not have to feel hindered by something that you know that someone said, oh, that you're lacking this, or you know you perceive differently in the world. I think that's just wonderful.
Thank you. I think you're totally right about it too, with like the comparisons to working out or having a trainer and people showing you where to position your body, like, or how to do this, because we as beings, we come out into the world where we learn how to talk and hear, and it's just innate, but there's so much more to it. There's a science to it all, which I really love. And yeah, you could go like voice coach classical route, you know, be very disciplined, or you could go, there are voice coaches for pop and country or just about anything. But, and they're also different too.
Or even like dialect.
Yeah.
Know what I mean? I think maybe that's part of it too, is I love dialect. I love accents. And now I sound like a huge nerd. And by the way, remember how you were like, this is a long-winded story. And then remember how Janet just totally started talking even more about it than you ever did and would not shut up about it. That's me right now in this moment. But like that's because, you know, as I've gotten older and just in the world that I'm in, I love that understanding of like, oh, you know, it's very, this language feels like it's more nasal, or this language, you, if you really are paying attention in that technical way, in that physical way that you're talking about, like, oh, the tongue is closer to the teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's the tongue is a bigger, plays a bigger role in this kind of language. And I just think that's all, if you'll pardon the pun, delicious.
Thank you. I love the pun. So you talking about the
thank goodness.
You talking about the dialect, it reminds me of something that's sort of related. I'll get back to, I've definitely got a part two to this hearing loss story, but I want to mention for a second while you said the dialect here. I filmed a music video yesterday, and we were doing like a bunch of backwards scenes, like where we're filming backwards. And
which I find so intimidating.
Oh gosh, what you're about to hear was very intimidating. and I don't know if it's going to work yet or not. I hope I'm saying this and it like gets published out into the world and worked perfectly. We'll see. But right. I learned how to say my entire chorus backwards, so that we could like film it backwards. So I literally went very nerd mode of just writing out all the words, then writing them phonetically, then backwards phonetically, and then listening to like the playbacks, so that like I would pay attention to like those T's and those S's and those ah's and those oohs. And I like it definitely, probably having some training or at least noticing those things was helpful, because I don't know how else I would have done it. It sounds like gibberish, but that's how deep I go into that soundscape landscape sort of thing. I love that stuff. And I had a great time with it. And I've been creeping everyone out singing my song backwards. So
I can't wait to see the video. I'm so excited about that. I absolutely love that.
Fingers crossed it works.
Oh, how fun.
We'll see.
What a big day yesterday. Your album dropped, you're recording the video. I mean, This is a cool frenzy of music activity around these couple days.
It has been really fun, and now we're doing this. So I'm just, I've had a great 24 hours or so of just all this.
Good. Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell me part two?
Yes, I would love to tell you part two.
Part two
of Hearing Loss Saga, Zoe Knight. We really did as a family just... And myself personally, I never really thought much of my hearing loss. I'd worn a hearing aid right up until about I was 8 years old for a minute there, because by then I'd lost all my hearing and I couldn't use a hearing aid anymore. So I was a little growing up a little nervous about wearing a hearing aid, even because it's something that none of the other kids have. And the time they looked very sterile and medical. It looked like something your grandparents wore, you know. So and from growing up being shy and all is already something just to focus on. I was always nervous about wearing glasses and hearing aid and those little things, which silly, but as a kid, you know.
Listen, your world is much smaller as a kid. Oh, we all know that.
Fast forward, I'm going to school, go to college. I, like we said, I got into the songwriting major at Belmont after changing majors from classical music. So I have been at school for like 3 years in college. I'm 21, I believe, at this time. And I wake up one day I'm in my first semester of songwriting class. I wake up one day and I can't hear anything. And that lasted, I think, for about a month, where I could hear a little stuff. Like if someone was right in front of me speaking extremely loudly, I could maybe pick out some things, but it was really hard. So I'd like lost the bulk of my hearing that day and it didn't come back. And so ever since then, I've had what I've called episodes where that same thing will keep on happening to me, whether it's lasts a week or a month. And every time I'm just losing another large chunk of hearing, and it's happened for like 4 or 5 years now like this, to the point where I'm mostly deaf. That's a hard way to describe it. I've lost the bulk of my hearing. So so that was the big thing where songwriting and then hearing loss hit like head on, full throttle there right at the beginning, you know. So it was, I'd always had music in my life and I'd always had hearing loss in my life, but in this way where it was, I was in such in my mind, I just felt like I was I guess in these dire straits of what am I doing with my life, you know, where am I going?
Which, by the way, people go through that and they're not dealing with nearly that challenge.
So that was the big thing in the hearing loss saga, was just that, and always having to deal with that in general, like from just a personal aspect, social aspect, work and business aspect, it definitely changed a lot.
Part two was like The Empire Strikes Back or the second Lord of the Rings movie. Everything got big and heavy. Hope you don't mind that I make light of it. I'm the person in the emergency room who's like arm is hanging off and there's a string attached of a vein. And I'm like, hey, let me crack some jokes. That's what makes me feel better. Yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
For sure. Is in a situation like that, I mean, that's, you know, something that I've experienced on both sides of having gone through some, again, like very specific mental stuff. That I really wanted to be able to look towards people who had already come through in whatever way it means come through, whether it's learn to live with something or, you know, get better or not get better, but, you know, help others and whatever that looks like. It helps to have that community or that sense of, I'm not the only person who's ever had to combat this or who has been faced with this particular set of challenges in my life. Did you have people? I mean, listen, what are you going to do? Talk about Beethoven? I mean, for sure. Like, that's a real thing. And that's something that, you know, I remain in awe of. Joni Mitchell wrote a beautiful song about Beethoven and her, you know, the sort of poetry of the experience it must have been for him to, you know, have been extraordinarily brilliant musically and to also have lost his hearing. Are there other, you know, that you can't call up Beethoven and go, hey, buddy, let's talk about what's going on. Did you have a community or any kind of mentor or even just, you know, somebody that you could look to and go, okay, this is, here's somebody who's gone through something like this?
I don't really know that many deaf people. I've met some since this, but I didn't really have anyone that had gone through this at all. I knew one girl growing up, like in elementary school for a minute, that also had cochlear implants at the time, and we were friends. But we were also both very deaf, and I feel like we couldn't understand each other. Neither of us signed, so hey, we're similar, but I have no idea what you're saying, and I'm not sure if you have any idea what I'm saying. So I'd had, you know, tiny point there of seeing someone like in that similar situation, but like, no, I didn't have anyone to talk to about that in that respect. My parents were amazing about it all. They really have been my rock on all of that, because, I mean, they don't even fully understand it, but they try to, you know, and they make the effort and the time to. And that's hard, too, even, like, just from your family. My family loves me. I love my family. We're great. And it's still hard because, you know, I'm having to ask people what they said multiple times. I get frustrated. They get frustrated. And it's so natural to forget, oh, wait, someone is having a serious issue here and I can't see it, and it's hard to remember or put myself in their shoes. So that's definitely hard. And there were definitely times where I think we all were probably a little fed up with each other, as much as we all love each other. But it's hard with communication, especially when you're first figuring it out. But I have some friends that are supportive, but none of my friends know what this is or how to talk with me about it necessarily. You know, they will do the best they can, but none of them have been through this. I ended up having to get a cochlear implant as well as another hearing aid, and the implant surgery I was kind of scared about and nervous, and I didn't really have anyone who had been through that. So that was probably hard. There are Facebook groups and people out there that I started joining in on conversations with, but that's about it. And I'm naturally not I love being social and talking to people, but I'm naturally not that way at the same time. I feel like I'm a little, you know, that tug and pull of my extremely social mother and my very not social father. You know, like, I've got a little of both.
Yeah, I get it.
I had my family, my parents, my grandparents, my brothers, they were all great, and a couple friends. There was just no way to really relate or way to describe it. I have, the best I can say is, like, I'm completely deaf in one ear. I'm like half deaf in my left ear. I have tinnitus, which is a constant ringing in my ears. And every now and then I wake up and I lose another chunk of hearing, and it sounds like, you know, I won't be able to hear you for a while. So, but that, yeah, it's not like being in a wheelchair, for instance, where you see that right there. I know how to help you. I know what you're like. They can't sympathize fully, but they know how to help. I know I can help you move this way or do that. Yeah. It's just totally invisible.
Yeah. I think, you know, listen, when there's a person who is experiencing something and they don't necessarily have that person who's right in front of them who say, you can say, like, oh, this person came before me and they experienced it. I feel like those people are called pioneers. So I guess that's what we're looking at. You're a bit of a pioneer, which is extraordinary. And it doesn't always, you know, it's like, oh, I'm not in a good mood today. I'm a pioneer. Thanks. That's great. That's not, like, yeah. it's not the thing that's going to make me feel better. Like, maybe some ice cream would, but, but yeah. Did you, as far as that kind of introvert extrovert, which I deeply, deeply relate to, just to go back to high school for a second, when you talk about, you know, being that string bean freshman who wants that part, how did that manifest in your kind of social life? What were your friend groups like, and were you very social after school, or was school the social part and then you kind of go home and get that chance to be the introvert again?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll start it off by saying I told my family I was going to do this podcast, and I was like, you guys don't think I'm that big of a nerd, right? Like, should they really be asking me to be on this? And they busted out laughing. They're like, no, this was meant for you. This is where you should be. yeah.
Now you listen to me, Zoe. This is not an all nerd podcast.
Okay.
Yes. I've talked to plenty of people who do not consider themselves
nerds. The list. They're, I mean, looking, when I went through like all the podcast people, all the people you've talked to, I was like, no, these are some cool people. So no, I totally agree. But we're not, you know, I heard the pitch of the show and just like, yeah, we're going to be on this. Let's, you know, talk about all the awkward moments. And I was like, I'm not really that awkward, right? Like, oh no, you were, and you still are.
thanks guys. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thanks. But it was true. Growing up, I was friends with everyone. I had friends. I was nice to everyone, but I didn't have like close friends. I didn't have friends that I hung out with after school a lot. I hung out with my parents a lot. I was in my room drawing and writing poetry and singing and being kind of that more, self-introverted sort of space there. Because I really wanted to have close friends. I don't think I really related to a lot of people. Hearing loss did play a part in that for sure. I was always really nervous and always really, I think, self-focused on what am I doing, what am I saying, which I know we all are growing up. But I think it was made harder by that for sure.
I'm sure you're right. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're right.
Yeah. And
anything like that, I'm sorry.
Oh,
I didn't
no,
mean to interrupt,
no,
but,
you're
which
good.
I'm sure I've done the entire conversation.
Oh, no, you're fine.
But, you know, anything like that just adds that extra layer on, you know, it's like as a teenager, we're already like sweating everything. And then you just are given like a giant extra overcoat of like here. Mm-hmm. And now you can sweat this too. Like that's very real.
Oh yeah. And I'm not sure about you, but like there are parts of my life where I was just so stressed or whatever, but I'll, you know, forget a lot of things too growing up. I'm like, what did I do? Who did I interact with? You know,
oh, God, all the time. Uh-huh.
It's like that little blank space in your head. What happened there? And I do have a vivid memory though of someone. I was talking to someone once, like maybe in middle school, and they were trying to tell me something. A girl and I were talking and she kept repeating the phrase, and I was like, could you repeat it again? What did you say? And after like the third try, I think third or fourth try, she just said it's not worth it and walked away. And so there were some times like that where I was, and no, I don't remember who it was, and I know like everyone's young and doesn't understand all that, so no slight towards whoever it was, but it's just that feeling I think I got a lot of that, like, oh, well, we don't need to tell you. It's not worth it. You know, I did get a lot of that growing up, I think is hard because, I dreaded the lunchroom because I never was able to sit in a spot where I could hear everyone. It was loud and chaotic. Like most of the time, I just sat there and smiled and would, you know, I didn't really know what all was being said. I could hear people, but like I'd be catching bits and pieces of a sentence and like puzzling it together a little bit. So sometimes I'd get a full conversation. Sometimes I wouldn't. I remember recently a guy at a gas station my roommate was talking to, and he had some crazy story he was telling her because she had, was buying something and there was some topic of Canada. And she's like, oh yeah, you like Canada? And he had said something to her, and I was beside her and smiling at the gas station attendant like, oh, that's a great story. I went back into the car with her and I was like, so what did he say? She's like, oh, he doesn't like Canada, he got stabbed there. Like, he, you know, I'm physically laughing at this guy who's telling me he got stabbed. I'm like, that's a great story, that's so sweet. So there were a lot of those probably growing up too, where I laughed at things I shouldn't have, or or, you know, I was trying my best, but it did not apply to the situation at all. You know, someone getting right. stabbed is not really the time to smile oh and laugh. God.
I'll tell you what, though, it makes a great story about a story. So if you could just get meta about everything, you have to just get through yeah. get through the first awkward period where you absolutely did not mean for that to happen and go down the way it did.
Yeah.
But after that, you got a pretty good story yeah. to tell about that story. Oh,
there's so many weird things like that.
So there's the payoff.
Like yes, it's totally worth the payoff. Hopefully the guy, he probably doesn't mind that I laughed at him. Yeah. But
well, it yeah. kind of it that that's the other thing I was going to say quickly is that the other thing it reminds me of is we just talking about, you know, your experience, even sitting in the lunchroom, it just made me think of, you know, like even when we go on vacation and we're in a different country and we don't speak the language, as exciting and as fun and as pleasant and as nice as people can be, you know, you go home to your hotel room or your apartment or whatever, and it's a, and I feel exhausted, and it's because I've been working overtime in this very specific social way in the social setting. And to even, you know, people who are like, oh, you know, I was in New York for a week and I would just, you know, just like navigating that city and the sounds and the overwhelming amount of people, all of that, when it's this kind of stimulation overload and you're trying, your brain is working overtime to process all of that stuff. You know, it sounds like you were sort of having that, you know, New York City experience again, while navigating just being a teenager and all the kind of stuff that comes along with that too. Like that's taxing, you know, no wonder you would blank out. Like how much can a brain process at any given time if it's you know, having to work overtime in situations that other people take for granted?
That's a really great comparison there with like going to a foreign country or a big city, especially when I lost the second wave of hearing, you know, in my 20s. I was exhausted all the time. I went to class and I slept and that was like it, because yeah. It was exhausting to try to hear everyone and to stay attentive. Yeah. So that's just, you said it perfectly right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing.
And look at you. Look, you're fucking kicking ass. It's fantastic.
Thank you. Thanks. That's nice to hear. The one thing that came to mind when we were talking just about like the lunchroom kind of stuff, I realized like another thing that doesn't just hit me, but everyone my age. I mean, I'm kind of the first generation to grow up with Facebook and social media too. Like to really, I remember signing up for my Facebook in middle school, I think, you know, with my friends. I know there was MySpace before that, but I never really did that. But like my school and all my friends and everyone, that moment, like that's when everything hit for us in the internet world more. Like I didn't use a computer much at all until then. And so I think that played probably a part in it too, being not only, I was definitely left out of stuff. I was not invited to the parties or whatever cool was going on. But I think probably seeing that stuff, you know, as well as knowing you're not there. I think that. And we still like, that hits me today, you know, on things like, oh man, that looks really cool. Or I don't have that thing, or, you know, it just seeps into
absolutely.
You. But I think that probably didn't, that's another thing just about growing up that I've noticed, like, oh yeah, this is not normally how people grow up, you know, seeing, or used to not be normal.
Mm-hmm. No, you said a mouthful. Yeah. I mean, I think that's, you know, I always say, like, I feel like my broken record is, I say, you know, I don't want to be that person who, as they get older, everything that happens that they didn't grow up with or that they worry about, like younger people, that I don't want to be the person that's like, well, I just hope these youngsters today can survive this horrible new social media thing. Because like, you know, I remember what it felt like to be, you know, 13 and to have an adult be like, you guys have way too many video games and movies you can watch now. I don't know what that's doing to you, but blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, cut ahead to when you're an adult and you're like, well, I guess I feel like I'm okay. I mean, yeah, I have my stuff, but who knows if my stuff comes from that or something else, or, you know. And so I'm always like, oh, I don't want to be that person. Like, I want to be the person that's, you know, hip to like the evolving. I've never sounded older than when I said hip to that, like, you know, daddy-o. But like, you know, to go to go to a place where I'm just like, oh, so worried about the youth of America, whatever. But social media is one of those things that's hard not to hold on to that concern. And I think it actually makes me feel better when people younger than me are also like, you know, I remember This American Life did an episode where Ira Glass talked to like his nieces or something, and they were in junior high or early high school, and they were like, no, it's so stressful. Like, worrying about how many likes you're going to get on your Insta is extraordinarily stressful, and it sucks. And yeah. I was like, okay, so it's not just like a person who didn't grow up with Instagram thing. It's like actually happening to people who, you know, are fully the exact age that, you know, it like Instagram would be the most important to in some ways, are saying like, yeah, this is stressful. Like, it made me feel not good for any of us, yet better just in that I'm not like so out of touch that I'm wrong about it being stressful. So
yeah, it's
good to hear.
Chiding all the younger folks one day being like, oh, well, when back in my day. Yeah. I know what you're saying. I actually like the idea of not having likes on Instagram. I know they had talked about that. Like, from a business standpoint, you'd have analytics on the back end, but
right.
But sometimes I like it, sometimes I don't. But you're right. Times are always going to change, and you got to adapt. And before there was social media, there was something else that, you know, hit us in that way.
Right.
But yeah.
Right.
But just, yeah, kind of interesting to think. I never try to like go
Absolutely.
Looking back and be like, what if I had only done it this way? Like, that's
right.
not, yeah. I definitely try not to do that.
100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's that know thyself thing, right? It's like, where do I stop with that? Like, how it's important to be self-aware, and it's important to be introspective and to learn and to feel like, you know, that relationship with yourself is what is ideally going to take you into growing and being a better version of yourself. But nobody tells you exactly when to stop and just be and be present and go, okay, I think I can stop like going down this rabbit hole now. You know, you sort of have to find, each person has to find that for themselves. And mm-hmm. That's kind of what it seems like takes up the majority of like us navigating our relationship to the world as we continue on it, right? Like, just, okay, what's this balance need to be like? Is, you know, what adjustments do I have to make? What sort of like, here's the soundboard of my life. Like, what needs to be turned down and what needs to be turned up, you know?
Yeah, that's a great analogy with turning things down and up. Like, I'm a natural worrier. You know, it's something I have to fight sometimes. But I think we probably all do to some degree. And probably, I think I've always thought like the lack of control I have in other aspects probably makes me feel like I got to control this. I got to worry over this, make this perfect, you know, when that's not
life. That's very insightful though.
Oh yeah. I've definitely thought about that. I'm not a controlling person at all. It's more like my own life, or like, I got to do this right. You know, got to be perfect here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just right there. And in a very small way, I was looking back at some pictures when I was back home for a minute, you know, quarantining with my family, and we were looking at some old pictures of me, and I just thought like, oh wow, I was actually really cute. I looked really good, and all these thoughts, like I was dreading looking at all those pictures, for instance, and this sense of worry had hit me over as a kid that I wasn't this, I wasn't that. I was definitely the scrawny kid that, you know, had not matured physically in any way. I still looked like I was 10 when I was, you know, in high school. But even that small type of thing, yeah, if I hadn't worried so much about that, like turning up that dial or turning down a dial like that, you realize so many other things about yourself. Even the smallest thing of, oh, wow, I actually was a really sweet looking little kid, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Video games.
Video games.
Video
games. You like them?
Maybe you wish you had more time for them?
Maybe you want to know the best ones to play?
Maybe you want to know what happens to Mario when he dies?
In that case, you should check out Triple Click. It's a brand new podcast about video games.
A podcast about video games? But I don't have time for that.
Sure you do. Once a week, kick back as three video game experts give you everything from critical takes on the hottest new releases
to scoops, interviews, and explanations about how video games work
to fascinating and sometimes weird stories about the games we love.
Triple Click is hosted by me, Kirk Hamilton.
Me, Jason Schreier.
And me, Maddie Myers.
You can find Triple Click wherever you get your podcasts and listen at MaximumFun.org.
Bye.
I want to get into this MASH game with you, which I do at the end of every episode. Have you played MASH before?
Is that like MASH where you like write down your favorite, like who you're going to marry? That sort of, like, I've not done
mansion,
this.
Mansion, apartment, shack, and house. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do it. I haven't done this in forever. Okay.
Okay. Well, guess what? I'll give you the category. So all you have to do is just come up with some good spur of the moment responses.
Cool.
Which I then will marry you to for the rest of your fictional future. Yes. So no pressure. No pressure at all. Okay. So the first category, let's do you're talking about how much fun you've had working with fellow musicians that you respect. Let's do three musicians, living or dead. Could be band, singer, songwriter, composer, whatever. Three musicians that we're going to give you this magical ability to collaborate with in some way in our alternate universe MASH year.
Okay. Alternate universe MASH year. Collabs. My number one is the Avett Brothers. I love them to death. I think everything they do is honest. Like the way they speak is honest. The way they sing is honest. Just you believe it because it's true. Whatever. They're just golden.
Yeah.
And I'll always love them. They'll be my number one. Avett Brothers. I love Brandi Carlile and I'd say Jack White just because of his vision of like the three, for instance, you know, you can keep a chair standing with just three legs, the idea of simplicity and giving yourself confines in order to go beyond them, you know. So I would say those are my people. Let's make it happen.
Great choices. Great choices. Beautiful. Okay. Next category. Let's do three. You're going to get your revenge on the freshman year musical, even though subsequently did get all the parts that you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So let's give you three musicals that you get to do and you get to be whatever part you want. It doesn't matter, you know, how old they're supposed to be or anything like that. It's just what seems like it would be really fun.
Oh, that's a really interesting one. I'm trying to think. There's this one musical. What was it? I haven't like delved in. Okay, I would love to do a Little Night Music. That's the one I'm thinking of. I think that's Stephen Sondheim, right? Yeah.
Probably, but I'm very bad at remembering who does what.
Being someone that like was in musicals and did classical music, again, it's that like blank space in my head. But I saw a Little Night Music once and I thought everything was so gorgeous. Some of the cast members would sing and play their instruments as well, at least in that version I saw. I would definitely do that. Go back and do 1776 again just to get my revenge. And what else? I already did this one, but I did really love it and I would do it a million times over. Sweeney Todd. I really love that
great.
One.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a great one.
Yeah.
Okay. Beautiful. All right. Next category, three foods that in this reality, either, you know, it could be like a food that you wish you could have all the time or a food you wish you could just eat so much of, but for various reasons, you don't. Like it's fattening or you're allergic to it or ecologically it feels irresponsible. In this alternate universe, we're going to give you whatever you want in perpetuity with no ramifications to yourself or anyone, any animal, anything. It's just like magic.
It's magic. It appears. And disappears out of your system.
Exactly.
Peeps. I would eat so many peeps, but I like them to be like a little.
Best first answer in this category ever.
Thank you.
Okay, great.
And I like to open the bag and make them a little stale for a day. I know that sounds disgusting, but like they just harden over.
Actually, it doesn't. I agree with you. Yeah. I totally agree with you. I don't want them to be that gummy. It's nice when they start to get a little, they resist you a little bit.
Uh-huh. Yes, exactly. You need that fight there against the little peep. The other two, I would definitely say barbecue. My parents actually own a barbecue restaurant, so I have a real love for that. And I just love barbecue. Yeah. And definitely sushi, because it's delicious. It's expensive. I can't eat it every day. Yep. I would eat sushi for breakfast every day if I could. I love it that much.
Oh, great. Okay, this is good because this takes me into our next category, which is three places in the world that, even if you've never been there, whatever your idea, your ideal kind of version of them, we're going to make it that you can sort of teleport there. So three places in the world you would like to have a getaway home of some kind, even if that means the middle of a city to you. But three places.
Yeah, could be anywhere in there. I think I did get the chance to go to Italy once and go to the Amalfi Coast, and I loved that. It was gorgeous and beautiful, and the food was amazing. And I stood out like a sore thumb. I'm so pale. I burn in the sun. So I'd probably hopefully become tanner too. That'd be cool.
There you go.
But so definitely Amalfi Coast or Italy in general. Honestly, it sounds so strange, but I would love to just transport to Knoxville and knock off the 3 hours.
Oh,
I love
it.
I know that's
not
a lame one, but it's just
It's not lame at all.
It's where all my people are, and my people are more important than the place to me. So I'd definitely do that.
Yeah.
And then let's see our third one. I think London's a gorgeous city, and I can leave when it gets too rainy and come back because I have teleportation powers. I think that would be what I'd do.
You bet you do. Mm-hmm. You bet you do. Gorgeous. Okay. This is a curveball I'm throwing in, very, very specific to you, Zoe. I want to give you the opportunity because I love the story you were telling about your dad. So let's say you get to take your dad, you're like, okay, dad, just, I want you to come over to this place, blah, blah, blah. He's like, what is it? You're like, oh, you'll see when you get there. And you open the door and it's a band that will play whatever playlist he wants, like three bands that you, or singer-songwriters, whoever, that you would love to surprise your dad with, where they're like at his beck and call, like, and now I want you to play this song of yours that I love. And now I want you to play this song of yours that I love.
That's cool. I kind of, not to this extent, but my brothers and I did that for my dad once. We made him drive to Nashville to visit me and surprised him by taking him to a Beck concert, which is one of his
number
ones.
I can't believe you already have done this.
We already did.
This is amazing. How
now,
cool
Beck,
is that?
Beck didn't take our requests like we asked, but whatever. but so definitely
Well, here's
Beck.
Your chance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Beck, you have a second chance here. Beck, he is a huge Cage the Elephant fan. And I think Cage the Elephant does amazing covers. They do like one of the whole wide world. That's awesome. They're just a great band.
Oh, nice.
So I'd say that. And I think like the White Stripes. Not like if Meg and Jack could like transport back to their younger selves. The White Stripes. Yeah.
Got it. Beautiful. Mm. Okay. Next category, three movies that you can jump into and just hang out and be with those characters whenever you want.
Okay, The Wedding Singer, that's my guilty rom-com. I love Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore. It is, yeah.
Pretty adorable.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's my, like, breakup movie, too, if I'm having a sad day kind of thing. Like, just watch The Wedding Singer.
I get
Singer.
That.
I love Lars and the Real Girl. I don't know if you've seen that one.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, I really love that movie. And so I would live in that. Even though it's a sad but happy movie, it's just too good. And Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I might regret that because it is a little
right there with you.
Dizzying. But yeah, I maybe don't want to be in it, but I definitely want to see it all the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
What a special movie. Yeah, this is a, what a great series of choices. Okay. Next category, let's do three. This is MASH. We got to get in. You brought it up okay. first. This is going to be three people from, you know, it can be an actor from the 20s or it could be like this character from this book, but three people mm-hmm. that you can have romantic times with. Doesn't have to be forever, but like Ooh. Romantic times with in this alternate MASH universe.
Okay. This is a little guilty pleasure, but I think Charlie Puth is the cutest, sweetest, coolest thing lately. He's a musician. So I just really, I think he's adorable. And he put out a song called Girlfriend, and it's like every girl's little like, oh my gosh, Charlie. I think that guy is cool. Other ones. I've always had a love for Johnny Depp, young Johnny Depp. I would definitely add What's Eating Gilbert Grape to my movie list if I could. Someone to meet like that, in that romantic yeah. sense. And I know.
Yeah, let's give you the yeah. Johnny Depp from the movie. Like maybe yeah, maybe you not, get Gilbert instead of our present day Johnny
yes,
Depp.
Yes, definitely. I need Gilbert. That's who I definitely need.
He's let a
Gilbert.
Lot of us down.
It's gotten. It's. I have to specify this Johnny Depp. That's the yeah.
That's perfect. I think many people would agree. Yeah.
Yes.
Beautiful.
I really do love young Adam Sandler. I think he's the cutest, coolest thing. Always had like a big crush on the Wedding Singer movie. So I would choose that.
Great. I will say I don't know Adam in any way well, but I will say my only experiences with him have been extremely positive.
He seems like a cool dude. So
yeah, just a total sweetheart. Like you would hope that someone with that much success would stay just kind of like, you know, a little bit of a G-shucks guy, and he definitely is.
Good.
Okay, and then final category. What should we do for you? Let's do three skills that you could wake up with tomorrow and you've sort of downloaded Matrix style, and they can be yeah. magical, they can be practical, whatever you want.
I like the download it Matrix style kind of idea. So let's see.
That'd be handy.
Yeah, it would. I mean, I don't want that hole in the back of my neck, really. That seems like it would freak me out a little, you know?
But touché.
Otherwise,
touché, nor do I.
I mean, I think as a musician, I'm good at my instruments, but I would want to be better magically at them, like to be able to pick up any instrument and just immediately be able to play it, you know?
Guess what I'm putting down?
Perfection.
Virtuoso.
Virtuoso there, yeah. Have that.
Yep.
Oddly enough, I don't think I would choose hearing, like super hearing or anything, because I think that just gets too testy with like trying to change yourself sort of thing versus yep. just having fun with the game.
I agree.
So
that way about myself for sure.
Exactly. I wish I had like a photographic memory. I think that would be really cool. Ooh, yeah. That would be fun. Maybe that's dangerous too, to be able to remember everything like in that way probably, but it sounds cool.
I think there's different types of, like, I feel like photographic memory is kind of different than the one that's like I think they call it total autobiographical memory, like Mary okay. Lou Henner and other people have, where I think you access the feelings that come along with those memories, which does sound kind of awful to me. But the mm-hmm. photographic memory could just be like you can look at something and you can just like remember it forever, as if you're looking at the page on a, you know, in a book or something. I feel like that's
yeah.
somehow that feels more emotionally protected than the other one.
I know exactly what you're saying. I think I watched some special about that once. That does not sound as fun to be able to really remember.
But photographic
everything.
Memory, I think you pick. Yeah, I think you pick the one that is like, that's
the
just going to be
one.
Rad. Yeah.
Yeah. More. Yeah. I can just remember stuff without having to write it down. The ability to make coffee whenever I want to, like it doesn't, I don't have to put the water in the pot and then push the button. It just like,
yes,
it's got the cream in it already and it's the perfect temperature all the time.
Yes, mm-hmm. indeed. Very yeah. well chosen. I just put that Thank with two you. Exclamation points.
Coffee. Yes.
Okay. Do me a favor and pick a number between 1 and 7.
4.
While I am getting your 100% guaranteed alternate universe MASH results.
Uh-huh.
Would you be able to please tell people where they can find you on social media, about the album that just dropped that is available to all, etc.?
Yep. So you can find me on all the socials just under Zoe Nutt, and there's two dots over the E. And I just released an album called How Does It Feel? It's featuring Brandi Clark and the Cadillac Threes, Jaren Johnston and Neil Mason. And really the song is just, with the title saying, how does it feel, is really asking, how does it feel to go through anything in each of these songs? It relates to each of them. How does it feel to lose your hearing? How does it feel to lose a friend? How does it feel to believe in yourself? Or, you know, any of those questions, I think this, these songs ask, and I think ultimately you get to decide the answers to them. That was at least my plan. So hopefully you like that and relate to that.
I love that. I love that. I'll tell you what, I'm a sucker for a good theme or concept album. A sucker. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah, it didn't come across. I didn't plan concept. It really kind of just fell into place. This
That's even better.
There before me. Oh, of course that's what it should be called.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Oh, that's great. Oh, okay. I love it. And I do have your outcome here. I'm feeling very good about it. I will say that to some degree, with a couple of things, which I'll start with, it does feel like it's a second chance / redemption time, because you do get the opportunity to slay in 1776 in that damned female role that you so wanted. You're going to give that to you on a silver platter.
Thank you. We are
also going to give Beck the opportunity to unscrew up and actually play whatever songs you your dad wants him to play and what you guys want him to play. So we've got 1776 knocked out. We've got Beck knocked out. Speaking of getting things delivered to you on a silver platter, I want you to know that you can have one day old Peeps forever in perpetuity. You'll never get sick from them. You can just dive in whenever you want.
Yes.
Get those Peeps. Get those Peeps. You will probably want to take a break from the Peeps just by virtue of the fact that you have a beautiful apartment in a little town on the Amalfi Coast.
Love it.
So I imagine you will also be eating a lot of delicious food there.
Yes, this is a good choice.
It's going pretty well. I like the idea of maybe even you like working there on the album that you're going to be doing with Jack White. It could, you know, you could just rent a little studio while you're there and just see what happens. But you will be collaborating with him, which I think is very, very cool. The only thing I'm concerned about is he may be a little intimidated because you are a musical virtuoso in every way with any instrument. In some ways, he might be the best person for you to be matched with because he's pretty damn talented himself. But
I'd say he's the virtuoso.
You are better than he is.
Good. I'm better than Jack White in my alternate universe.
That's correct. That is correct. And you can also, when you want to escape into fiction, jump into Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind whenever you want, which is a beautiful, beautiful, like the most magical and most sad things about life ever sort of encapsulated in that movie. And I adore it. So I'm very excited that you got it. And then all of this, as much or as little as you would like to share it with the adorable Charlie Puth, you ended up with him. So
score.
Well done you. And
Thank you,
my friend, marks the end of your MASH episode, your MASH game, I say, and then I guess I just spoiler alerted, which is that it's also the end of the episode. And it has been so lovely talking to you, Zoe, and getting to know you. I hope I get to see you perform in person and meet you and give you a hug, and that no one is getting anything from anyone virus wise when that happens.
I would love
that
too.
Because it'll all be okay. I'm excited to see that video, and I'm stoked for everybody to check out the album. So I will make sure to get a link to that in our episode notes and all that good stuff. So that's it. We're done.
All right. Thank you for having
me.
Thank
you.
Awesome. I love getting to talk with you, and I do hope we can meet in person when we're actually able to, you know.
We got
to
make it happen.
I want to give people hugs again and say hi and shake
hands.
I miss
it so much. Yeah. Oh, I miss it so much.
Uh-huh.
All right, my new friend. I will, and then all of you listening right now, if I have not stopped recording yet, which I have not Talk to you next time on the podcast.
Bye.
The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.